said talk to me, damn it, or else I'm gonna throw you in the fire!
You stupid bitch, you filthy!
Welcome back to Flyover State of Fear. We got Brian and myself talking The Exorcist 2, The Heretic, only because we're trying to line this shit up with the release of the requel. I got the anthology
Blu-ray here. That means I have both Exorcist Beginning and Exorcist Dominion in here. Hello.
I have never revisited Exorcist Dominion, but we'll get into that at the time.
Yeah, I mean, like, come on, this could be a whole series.
Does that Blu-ray have the, like, normal cut of the movie, the theatrical cut, or does it have the director's cut of the first Exorcist?
It's got both.
That is a rare piece, then, because people are very...
Yeah, we've got original theatrical version here, mm-hmm. extended version,
I don't
Heretic.
Three,
and then Dominion and Beginning.
Yeah, I have this. It's for the original. It's an extended version because one of the only. It's very hard to find the original theatrical with a good export.
My DVD that I got signed in. It's in the cardboard case, and it's signed by Linda Blair. It might be an original cut too.
Yeah, that's it was pretty available for a while, and then
early DVD. It had to be.
I think that's the big deal right now with that, like 4K and all that they're putting out. You know, they're releasing like a restored like. Anyway, guys,
we're not even talking about The Exorcist.
Yeah, me and Brian could. And I think we're the only two people that could get in depth about just like DVD. Like physical
media is, I'm telling you, people are learning. Like, the more people turn against streaming services, the more physical media is going to be making a comeback. And we look like geniuses. A couple of years ago, some people that I respect were like, I'm done with my Blu-rays. I'm getting rid of my whole collection.
And they did. I know. You even see, like, with all the strike stuff now, I'm like, oh, conveniently, now you're putting your Disney shows on physical.
All of a sudden, time to sell Prey on Blu-ray and make a few dollars.
Ooh, who's gonna buy it? I'm gonna buy it. Yeah. As you tweeted out,
I want a complete series though. Where's 1 through 5 on Blu-ray?
Where's 1 through 5? Well, I have 1 through.
There's a 1 through 4 Blu-ray set.
Yeah, I have a 4. But where is the Hellraiser reboot as well?
That's what I said
you and I had the same reply, actually.
Well, I've been skeptical because I think the Prey thing has been announced a couple times, kind of false starts, and it seems to be pretty official now. I think you can actually like put a pre-order in. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, yeah, as soon as that, I was like, okay, good, so that's really gonna happen, great. Where's Barbarian and where is the new Hellraiser?
Barbarian is the biggest head scratcher because that was a theatrical success,
right? Exactly. And we know it's it went to HBO Max first, so that probably means it's a Warner Brothers movie, right?
Yeah, and they put out a good Blu-ray. Brian froze a little bit, so I don't, buddy, there you are.
I know, my god,
that's fine. I will say the Warner Brothers, the only bone we have to pick with them right now is their Evil Dead Rises Blu-ray 4K that's like really nice looking and everything. They completely voided it of any special features, which it's like,
all right, so here we go. That should fix it.
Yeah.
All good. All right, guys.
You're good. We're gonna keep this.
We live in here in Ohio. You got to live. You gotta have a 4G small right internet.
Yeah, you still got fucking DSL dial up.
Yeah, it's like
Someone's on the phone. Sarah, get off the phone. I'm recording.
Sarah picked up the phone. That's what kicked me off. Yeah, absolutely.
But anyway, anyway, since last you and I talked, in the fear capacity, we've both, I think, have watched a decent amount of stuff, and I've also went to that horror convention, which was a ton of fun. Got these.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about that. Movies. Just like who'd you see? What you
so I didn't pay for any booths. No. My friend paid for Keith.
They don't like you take pictures. They don't like you standing off the side and taking pictures. Yeah. I have a picture of a very annoyed Lou Ferrigno.
I physically saw, like Jackie Earle Haley was there, which I gave a lot of prep. I gave a lot of props to because, like, you have to be dealing with people
he's
that are
in
like
the new season of Killigan on Peacock.
I gave him props because I was like, I want to tell you your Freddy was terrible, but I won't because we're respectful.
Wasn't his performance, it just wasn't well written.
Heather Langenkamp was there. I was very regretful I did not pay for that one. I should have. Keith David, my friend, saw and did photos with Sam. Did
I
that
pay for a Keith David?
Yeah, she if did.
They live Blu-ray signed.
Yeah, he was singing and he was singing R&B like 70s R&B to everyone. Nice.
Also, in
I saw Alyssa Sutherland out of the corner of my eye. That was very cool. The new Deadite Mommy.
Sure.
Yeah, and then like crazy old what's his fucking name?
Oh, Randy Quaid, right?
Randy Quaid. He was actually like no line. I like he just blatantly looking at him.
What's his big horror connection?
Nothing. I think they because
well,
the other.
I mean, I know there's a couple horror movies. Like, isn't there one called Mom and Dad or something that he's in? Or
oh, in the name, not the Nick Cage Mom and Dad.
No, there's a different. Maybe it might have a different name.
I think you're wait. I think
I'm picturing a cover here. Now you're gonna. I hate to Google on the.
I think you're thinking of
Yusuf ended up Googling.
You're a big bully. What's his name? He's not married to Roseanne.
Tom Arnold.
I think you're thinking of Tom Arnold for Mom and Dad.
I'm definitely not.
But anyway, yeah, so he was there. I mean, he had his big goofy beard. Yeah, he's in a movie, Mom and Dad Save the World. Mm-hmm. But
something else.
But like Lorraine Bracco was the table next to him, and like she's not in a fucking horror too. Like there were just some people there like that. Like just Lou Diamond Phillips was
cash
there.
Cash checks, you know.
The big one that like lines and lines were for Keith or Sutherland.
Oh, okay.
And like
Lost Boys, a lot of Lost Boys fans.
Yeah, oh, it was a Lost Boys reunion. I mean, like Alex Winter was there.
Oh, that's awesome.
When we got there, there was a big line because I only went on the Sunday. And we're like, all right, let's wait in because we were early for when they opened the doors. And we wait a little bit and the guy comes up and goes, yeah, the Kiefer Sutherland line. And we're like, oh, I was like, thank God I didn't wait in this for 40 minutes to realize I don't have tickets to this.
Right, I'm not here to see Kiefer Sutherland.
But it was cool.
Okay, I want to circle back. It's this movie. Can we see? It's called Parents.
Parents, okay.
That's the movie I was thinking of.
Gotcha. Cool. That would have been a fun poll to, like, if you were wanted to talk to him.
I've never seen it, but for some reason I just had it in my head. That's a good cover. Font. Mm-hmm. And, you know what I mean? One of those things I just saw at a video store a million times and never watched.
It's not this cover. It's like the fucking Exorcist Heretic. Like, I'm just the picture of the...
Linda Blair's face.
Of Linda Blair's face. I was like, oh, it's, this.
Yeah, that old.
It is very like I remember that iconography, but no, it was a fun time. I enjoyed my time there. I want to go to more cons. I think next time we do more stuff with them than just kind of walk around. You kind of get punched drunk by just like walking and not wanting to buy shit like, anymore.
You kind of either want to have a plan of someone you want to see mm-hmm. or something you're looking to buy.
Yeah.
And it's like, you don't necessarily have to buy it while you're there. In fact, it's kind of better if it's really obscure or really expensive and you know you'll never buy it even if you find it, but it still gives you something to look for yeah. and a reason to go to all the different little stands.
I
don't know if were any kind of like comic cons have like artist tables.
I went to a lot of artist tables, and I made friends, and I gave them our business
cards.
They're
cool to at least look at, you know.
Yeah,
like,
I bought a cool print. It's in my office of Chip Hazard, one of the Small Soldiers guys blending Woody.
Nice.
From Toy Story.
Me and Sarah just watched Small Soldiers like for the first time as adults the other day. And God, Joe Dante, man.
I got to take a photo after we record. I got to take a photo of this and send you the art. It was Nick Nitro in a nice like watercolor, like kind of pen and ink blending of Sheriff Woody in the blender. It was funny as shit. And the guy might be a guest actually. And I met the highlight of the stop, Lloyd Kaufman, which like apparently everyone gets to meet kind of, but you bought one thing from Troma. I had a pin and I bought a Toxic Avenger, the cartoon DVD.
Oh, okay.
You know, and got that signed. Got a video of it. Funny guy.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, cons can be a lot of fun. I've had a lot of great times at cons.
So we'll be doing more and and on our show in the meantime, since then I've been upping our fucking TikTok game with this show and just making horror content. Movie wise, I haven't I'll leave you to ramble off a few. I've actually kind of been in a lull.
So I had two what I would consider disappointments here. First of all, The Pope's Exorcist came to Netflix. And God bless the star power of Russell Crowe that he can get a movie this bad into the theater. It is fucking atrocious.
But it's not even, it's not even, except for his moments on screen, it's not even like so bad it's good, how does it get made bad? Like,
no.
I think it was
it's just boring and by the numbers. And it was he's, of course, very good because he's Russell Crowe.
Dude,
he's having fun. He's doing fun jokes, bits.
I giggled every time in his little scooter and his Roman accent.
It's just how he's going to talk from now on, I'm pretty sure.
I leaned
from four to this to the Craven trailer. That's just his voice now.
Me and Sam saw Talk to Me. And that Craven trailer played, and I turned to her and I went like, "That's the Pope's Exorcist," because he's doing the same fucking accent.
I'm gonna admit that the Craven movie looks interesting. It doesn't look terrible.
I have no qualms with it.
It just looks like a fun kind of action movie. You know?
I hope it's that. I was texting you, and this is in the show. I was texting you. I saw Blue Beetle last night, and like a different vibe of Craven had the same thing of. Wow, if these last few slates of superhero movies had just this fun feel and just, it felt like a one-off superhero origin movie.
But that's the thing, my thing with that is, I never had any doubt that it would probably be a pretty decent movie, well-made, well-acted, I like that kid. It just looked a little too, it literally was like, just stuff we'd seen, so not only a lot, but very recently, it had a lot of elements that we'd just seen in, like, Shazam, where, like, a kid gets powers he doesn't understand, and then he's got to deal with his family, and it's a big family story.
I liked it a lot
better. Plus, it's, like, very Iron Man-y with the Iron Man villains, and, like, that's our tech, and we're gonna, you know, it felt very familiar.
Buddy, it's all the above. Watch it. Have fun with it.
Right. I still think I'll see it on streaming if it's on a service I have.
If you get a cheap theater, go to the theater while it's still in theater. I'll give it that go-ahead. But anyway, horror movies. We both saw Talk to Me.
Yeah, we did both see Talk to Me. Talk to Me was very
really good. I think it was. It wasn't the scariest or greatest, you know, modern horror movie ever saw. But that's the A24 effect of how they market those things.
I'll tell you what I saw: a movie that ripped. Before I talk about another movie that didn't hit with me. I saw Boat Dracula, and it was awesome.
I want to see it so bad. My friend called.
So good, dude.
My friend who we were to the movies with called me up, and he was like, "Hey, so I went and saw that," and I was like, "You fucking asshole!"
It's just a mean, grimy monster movie, and because they wanted to use the budget for like effects, it's just got a great cast of like character actors in the lead. It was just a lot of fun.
This is Davos.
It's definitely going to be a streaming classic. Like, people are going to, once it hits streaming, people are going to eat it up.
I need to go see it. Hopefully it's still playing, like, 2 weeks from now.
Yeah.
Or maybe Sunday.
It's worth it. I know it's been a wasteland out there this summer, and, you know, aside from Barbie and Oppenheimer, everything's just been kind of, like, falling by the wayside, but... There have been some good movies, it's just nobody went to go see them.
So there's been good movies. That's box office shit.
Right. Like, obviously, money doesn't equal quality, but it's been a pretty grim summer.
It's been rough. Having said that, speaking of rough, or did you have one other movie?
Oh, you were making such a good segue. I wasn't going to stop you.
I know, but I'm bad. I would do this on our other show.
You can't help yourself.
All right.
You have to your own segue. Jesus. I'll just say that I watched a horror movie on Hulu, Ennis Men. And I say horror. It's got a very horror-y poster. Ennis Men. But it's a real Skinamarink situation where it's like, is anything actually happening here?
What's it called? Ennis Men?
Ennis Men, or it might be Ennis Men. It's E-N-Y-S-M-E-N. Ennis Men.
Ennis Men. Oh, yes. I've seen this. Yes. I am a fucking... I'm surprised I haven't watched this. I am a slut for... Hulu. There's a picture. Yeah. Play.
I was just saying I love Hulu. I love Peacock. But... this one was just a little too slow. What saved it for me was the scenery is very beautiful. It's all filmed on this like Irish island. So like,
okay.
It's like very beautifully and scenic and like, but it just didn't really like amount to very much for me. I'm sure it's going to be somebody's favorite. Everything always is. But again, it was just one of those like, you're expecting me to do a lot of the work to make this scary in my mind. And you got to give me something.
Yeah, speaking of give me something, now, the fucking Exorcist 2, The Heretic, did not give me a lot, but not what I want. So we picked this, Brian and I were kind of talking, we wanted to line this up to when you're listening to this. With Believer coming out, and I had purchased this kind of as a while ago, as it was on sale, it was like real cheap, it was like $8 or something.
The man's a completionist.
And then, well, I was like, I have one, and I have three, and three is one of my favorite movies. I was like, you know what? Two. We'll complete the middle.
Yeah, completionist.
One day I'll watch it. And I was new, like
one. And of so you had movies. Never seen it before this.
If I had seen the stills, the poster, and like maybe a faint memory on like AMC Fear Fest in the, you know, in like the fifth grade, which means I've never seen it.
Yeah.
but especially like that name for me, always like The Exorcist. A little, I was always a little hesitant of all of it because it had.
I like the name. I think The Heretic is a cool name.
Yeah,
It's got a lot. It's got multiple layers because it's talk. You know, because it's partly about. You know, there's people accusing Father Marin of being a devil worshiper. We have Richard Burton. He gets accused of worshiping the devil at some points in this movie. Linda Blair herself, that is the, you know, is the heretic.
Someone in this podcast will be able to pick up on all these things. I actually think this may be.
Well, it's funny because, so I've watched this movie a couple times.
Sorry to hear that.
It's not... I guess I want to start with, because we are, you know, we're going to pick it apart. We're going to shred some things.
Yeah.
But I will say that on this rewatch, I was like, this movie is not as bad as its reputation. I'm not saying it's not bad.
I don't think
it's as bad as its reputation. I think it's a little boring. I think that's part of the problem. And it's, I think people were disappointed that it never really, like, we don't get Linda Blair as the ex. She doesn't get possessed again. And I think that's kind of what, you know, you got to remember your normie audience just wants to see more of the thing they liked.
But it's also that combined with a funky science fiction movie more than anything.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. I'll just burn through just like a synopsis here so that we can, so that then we have a structure to work from.
Yeah.
So Reagan is in a facility
4 years after.
Immediately, I'm like, does Reagan belong here? This seems like a lot of, like, severely mentally handicapped people and, like...
In the most complex fucking building that's ever been made.
Yeah, in a weird, like, glass-roomed... but anyway, I'm not sure it seemed... I remember definitely before, but it helped me, I noticed this time... I always wondered, did she work? Like, I was always like, does Reagan work here? Is she also? And there's even times when, like, she interacts with some of the kids and she helps them because she's, like, using demon powers or whatever. But, like, again, it blurs the line. You're like, is she a patient? Is she, like, an intern? Reagan's there. Her maid from the first movie is still around because they couldn't get Ellen Burstyn back. But we got the maid back. We've got Nurse Ratched, hot off a cuckoo's nest, only 2 years out of cuckoo's nest.
Impressive.
Impressive get, and she's good in this. She's doing her thing.
Yeah.
And like I said, we have the opening scene actually opens with Richard Burton botching an execution, or sorry, an exorcism. We might as well have been execution.
Some creepy iconography, some fucking fire.
Also, I noticed this. I just clocked this at the very beginning. Right before he sows into his exorcism, he prays to a little thing, a Father Marin, not to God or Jesus. He's like, Father Marin, give me strength. I was like, maybe you should have not done that. Maybe that's part of the problem.
I never know. I never picked up on. I mean,
there are some fun effects when she's burning out, when the girl sets herself on fire.
That looked great. My first note of this actually was this is just me being sassy. Is like, it starts with the intro and the noise. It has all that noise, and like this movie, because this is more sassy. Oh, based on those sounds alone, like, this would be every A24 fan's fucking favorite movie if it was released.
It's got get a couple of those hard violin stings.
Where it's like, ooh, you're ambiguous enough. I like it. And it's like, no, it's rough. But yeah, we start off there.
It's no tubular bells, right? You know?
I was surprised the restraint this movie had to not even include tubular bells.
Yeah, I will, and I think that's another thing that, like I said, I think it affects people's, because I think people, part of what people didn't like about this is it wasn't enough like what they wanted it to be, and that's always part of the problem, I think. And I think straying so far and trying to be something so different ended up hurting them. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm not trying to say that this movie was, like, perfect and people misread it. I just think that factored in.
It's a good point to bring up. It's a big factor, and it's also where I scratched my head with, because this is such a famous, like, botched movie too, that I was like, why the fuck?
So bad that it actually ruined the chances of the third movie, which is good.
Yeah, and that's where I was just gonna say is, why the hell did the third movie even get the Exorcist 3 title? I know why it did, but like, it seems like, you know, if it was today, it would just be called, you know, Exorcist, you know, an Exorcist story or some shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I know why. I mean, the quick answer to that for everyone listening is William Peter Blatty, who wrote the fucking movie, or wrote the book, wanted to direct 3, and it's really just another detective serial killer story, 3 is, and they hammer-fisted an exorcism in there. But this is not that podcast.
It would basically make his movie unless he... do all that
there,
shit.
By the way, I meant to bring this up earlier. There is a reason also why we're not talking about like The Exorcist, Exorcist 3 this week. I'm kind of saving those for, you know, I'm assuming those are 2 movies guests would love to talk about someday.
Something important.
Well, no, you're my co-host, you bitch.
I'm out of here.
No.
I actually, sorry, spoiler alert, thought you had already done The Exorcist 3.
We've talked about it.
Okay.
We
see, I definitely watched the show before I was on it, guys. Definitely.
It just started off that well. I mean, I find it like funny, like, you know, the fun facts of this are, like, Linda Blair refused basically to be in this, and then they were like, you're contractually obligated. And she's like, okay. Yeah. And the way she like sewed it to himself was, I want to fuck his name up, Lupton. The priest, Marin. Is that Father Marin the main?
No, Father Marin's is Max von Sydow. Max von Sydow.
No, yeah, not Father Marin.
I can't remember. Yeah, it is like Luthen, but I just kept calling him Richard Burton because he's.
Yeah, Richard Burton. That's what I meant. Richard Burton, Lamont. She was like, I had a great I worked with him and this and that. But the one thing she absolutely refused to do, and you could make so sense in the movie, is do any of the Pazuzu makeup, the Captain Howdy, because when, you know, it's all the flashbacks, that's not her, that's a different actress.
Yeah, it's clearly somebody made up to look like her, yeah.
It's why the end possession scene is she's just like the glowing eyes.
Yeah.
She just outright was like, I'm not wearing that shit again.
Good for her. You know what? Good for her.
Yeah. Weirdly enough, we talked about this movie and its reputation. Of course, in a little bit of research I did, Martin Scorsese and Quentin Tarantino both have separately said they loved this movie for their own, you know, their own reasons. And
We'll get into it. There's definitely some ideas here. I always like when, you know, I cannot fault a movie for trying some things and, like,
well,
it's like expanding the lore and doing their best.
Scorsese liked it, from what I have here. I mean, he's a religious guy, or, like, you know, likes the symbolism, and he said it mimicked the story of Job from the Bible. For those unfamiliar, it's a story about great goodness bringing great evil upon itself. Kind of a here, because then my next fucking note, and this is all I have for fun facts, is no one from the director to writers has any idea what the locusts symbolize.
I'll take a crack at it. We'll see. Because there's kind of like an analogy going on with the locusts, right? Something about the...
They come out every certain while and they attach themselves to...
Yeah, but it's something about like the locusts are like the minions of the demon. They're like the minions of Satan. But one locust can like resist the like... They get their wings touched and then they're all under the control of the
we
swarm.
But
there's one that can... It can resist, even if it gets touched, it still can break away and do its own thing, and that's the savior, and that's supposed to be Reagan, I think.
Yeah, it is, because she does go away at the end, her...
Right, she breaks away, she's the one who can break the spell. Supposedly, once Pazuzu has you, it never lets you go, but she is the one who can get away and break it, and then that is what breaks Pazuzu's power indefinitely.
It makes no... The whole ending is a very big, like, yeah. A lot of this movie, too, is just
and like
yelling
I said, this
and
is probably
screaming.
The third or fourth time I've watched this, and I think I understood it the best this time, and that's still the best I can do.
It's good. You're nailing it, Brian. You're doing such a good job.
We skipped over a bunch of stuff. We're just talking about the lore here.
Yeah.
But in the structure of the movie, she's at this facility and living in a fancy... Also living in a fancy apartment that is also at the facility. Is that...
I don't...
Did you know?
It kind of seemed like it. She also had a amazing art studio.
But not amazing art.
No, it was rough. It was rough.
Still left for $75 on Twitter.
Callback. Yeah, dude. Also, like, what a... I know it's because Ellen Burstyn was like, I'm done. But, like, in the eyes of the story of, like, you know, the Reagan and her mother... That woman, who is a famous actress, is never doing... She is staying by that child's side.
Yeah, like, she would never leave and just go, okay,
never,
well, I'm going to go do a project now.
She would never be like, I'm going to go film, you know, Casablanca remake over in Iraq again.
She would take Reagan with her,
yes.
You know? Since it seems like, at the beginning of the movie at least, Reagan is showing no signs of anything. In fact, to the point where she's, like, basically repressed it. She doesn't remember. She remembers being sick. And then that's like about it.
So in the synopsis that I would normally read, owning to his experience with exorcism, Father Lament is chosen by his superiors to investigate the death of Father Marin, who died during the exorcism of a young Reagan McNeil. Lament finds Reagan under the psychiatric care of Dr. Tuscan. By hypnotizing the girl, he is able to learn that Marin is previously exorcised by the same demon from a boy in Africa. Hoping for answers, Lament travels to Africa in search of the youth. Now, from what I've read in at least the Wikipedia and watching the movie, is Reagan is a patient there, and basically I looked at it as, because of her experiences, has an open invite, just kind of like, you come through as therapy because you went through such a hard trauma. And something like Lumen is, you know, he's hired by the Pope, remember, to investigate this fuck up exorcism and the death of Father Karras 4 years later. And, you know, they're the ones kind of bringing up like, Reagan, you're suppressing your memories. You don't, you know, and I was like, why are we trying to dredge this one up?
Exactly. Like, why are you trying to, like, if it ain't
like
broke,
they're like,
forget.
You had a couple,
it's okay to forget
they're
it.
Like, yeah, you've had a couple of nightmares at some point, right? And I'm like, okay, I ever thought, okay, we all have nightmares. Doesn't mean we need to, like, you know, round it up out. Like, I'm still going to have the nightmares.
Get on that hypnosil from Freddy movies.
All right, now you go. Because there's more lore in this thing.
Well, you kind of touched on it already. So he's investigating Father Man. the Dr. Nurse Ratched has a Inception machine.
Mm-hmm.
It's essentially,
yeah, that's a great way to put it.
Right? Well, and it's essentially that kind of science fiction where it's like you were just meant to accept this works. It's like a hypnosis machine that can connect people's thoughts, basically. But there seems to be no, you just sit down and a light blinks in your face and you're like, do it, sync up. And you're like, okay, I'm synced up. Now you sync up. Okay, we're synced up now. There's no, like, it doesn't. Well, they blink the lights on and off at each other and then they're just in sync. And it's kind of.
Someone talks to you a little bit.
You don't see a lot of what they see when they're in sync with each other.
A couple of times, flashbacks
to the not first movie, and like, I can't believe they got Max von Sydow to come back. He not only to come back, but play Father Marin, old and young, again in this. Wild. They must have paid
Max
him.
Max von Sydow worked, man. That's all you got to say about that guy.
Yeah, they must have just backed a dump truck of money to his house. They're like, get on this.
But that scene, because when we're at that, it's so lazy because of that, because it's just the camera, you know, on everyone's face, and
it takes a long time, so you like spend a lot of time with the lights blinking and people staring kind of like
and Nurse Ratched gets in like a fucking trance. We like Linda Blair, fine, she's like, I'm good, and then for some reason Marin, who not Marin, I keep saying Marin, the pre-Lupton,
Lufton,
you know, he's like,
I love the way he just jumps in. He has no experience.
Yeah,
he's never seen this machine.
I'm gonna get on it, and I got it now. I could get her out of it. I know what's going on.
He immediately gets sucked in.
And
in 2 seconds, he is completely overtaken by it and like cannot help it. He's completely useless. Nurse Ratched's about to get her heart crushed by Pazuzu in the dream world.
I saw
Reagan's out in the real world feeling her up.
When they're fucking finger banging the heart in that scene too.
Yeah, they're really
like, I peeked over. I remember Best the Worst covered this, and I peeked over, and I think it was Jay or one of them had a great point of it. They're like, this is only in here so they could get that shot of them all together and Reagan today and possessed Reagan side by side over her shoulders.
Pazuzu Reagan, she literally calls herself Pazuzu Reagan a couple, at the end of the movie.
But the hypnosis thing, and then that's with there, and then the later reveal of like, well, actually Pazuzu only attaches himself to people who have a psychic ability. Who have telekinetic psychic abilities or something around there. It's the only way that demon gets touched, and that's why Reagan was chosen, and that's what's up with that boy. It's like, what the fuck? And then, like, a lot of this movie for me was like, wow, that's dumb. I have a note here, because so after that whole thing happened, right, with the heart, with the fucking fingering.
Sure.
There's some psychological mumbo jumbo. I think they say psychological facts with syncing with another mind. They just talk to each other. I'm watching it. Laura wasn't watching, but she was like stretching and doing shit. I literally hear her go, she goes, what is this garbage? Because like from the outside, not watching it, everything from ambient noises to dialogue just was jargon.
Yeah. There's a lot of bullshit going on.
Every time, because they were long sequences of the locust camera.
Yeah, there's like, some locust camera in this.
This is a 2-hour movie that could have been a tight hour and like 25, 30.
Well, we haven't got into, so Reagan, you know, it's starting to get weird after this thing with the machine, and to further investigate, because Richard Burton gets a vision that Father Marin, or he reads or something, I can't remember how he knows that,
yeah, Father Marin's in Africa.
Which lines up with basically what The Exorcist Beginning and Dominion are kind of about, which is like when Father Marin was in Africa.
Oh, okay.
And another, you know, this is obviously different culturally. I don't know how racist this is. I don't know enough about African culture to tell how racist this one is.
There's moments where it just feels offensive.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe it's genuine and maybe it's not. I don't know. But this whole society, of Africa.
We can't use James Earl Jones as a barometer because he helped star in Soul Man. So I just
he's also in Coming to America.
I love that movie. Love that. But anyway,
he's gonna go investigate this previous, exorcism that Father Marin did, and that's what we were talking about earlier. He learns this lore about these locusts and this boy who could like turn them away. This plague of locusts, so he could turn them away with his like. With his whip or whatever he's spinning around his, I thought he was gonna David Goliath. I was like, is he just gonna start whipping rocks and knocking single locusts out of the sky or whatever? But no, he just spun it around a bunch. But anyway, that's where the lore that I was talking about earlier about like one person who can resist Pazuzu and break the cycle or whatever, kind of, right?
I almost wish this different culture. You know what's a better version of this movie? Ooh, at least with the app, like that, like the tribal stuff, and is I think this, it, or it's just foreign because I don't want to get my cultures wrong and act and be offensive purposely, but is the Serpent and the Rainbow?
Oh, okay, yeah,
right,
yeah,
like Serpent and the Rainbow.
To going me, and investigating a different culture and kind
of yeah, to me, and like some of the thematics they use in this. That's the good version of this movie. You cut all the Reagan shit out.
I loved James Earl Jones's locust costume. Like there's a weird thing where like you think you're seeing this like tribal version, and then it all of a sudden like what he like wakes up and James Earl Jones is just like a regular doctor.
That got me.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was cool. Also, I started to say earlier, but this whole African country they're in takes place on a soundstage. There's like not a single outdoor shot. The backgrounds look as fake as fucking possible. It's so clear that they're indoors time. You mean with some like fake looking mud huts and stuff.
It's just pink. Look at the background. It's just like white pink wash and yeah, like some
it looks like brown. It looks like they redress some sets from Star Trek and like made some shit.
It's because they have generally the Africa shit's like it's like oh she's Professor X with like further range
because of their connection because of the sci-fi hypnosis wackadoo machine, which I wanted to say was so silly, and it really made me think about the stark contrast of how brutal the medical experiments are in the original Exorcist. Like some of the scariest stuff in the Exorcist is watching them perform those science experiments mm-hmm. on her and try different shit. It's just as, like, I feel just as bad for her then as I do later in the movie. And then to, like, see them sit and, like, have a light shine on their face and be like, oh. Like, just, by comparison, so silly.
It's, watch the, it's the same vibe. It's weird. The movie to me is, what if and this is the time frame, like, what if we made the Exorcist disco?
Yeah, you know, there's definitely some elements I noted in the near to the end of the movie. We'll get to them, but like some stuff.
Bring them up.
I don't want to jump ahead. I want to get through just a little bit more because he comes back from Africa and he like kidnaps Reagan, right? He comes back. First of all, he's got a Dan Flash's ass African shirt on now underneath his priest coat. But anyway, he looks crazy. And he kind of, there was a weird, like, kidnapping, like, it's definitely not meant to be that way in the movie. She's helping him investigate, and they're going to go back to that. They have to go back to the house. That's the thing. And, but like the way it kind of vibed to me, it's like this older man taking this young girl, and you have these female caretakers chasing after them and worrying about her because she's with him. And it just had this real, and then eventually when they do get to the house and like Regan Pazuzu is there, and then she looks she turns herself all sexy, and then they make out. It definitely, I was like, okay, I'm weirded out by all this. I don't know if you got vibed on any of that. It was upsetting to me.
It ain't great. You know, oh man, there's just like weird choices too. Like I think like, because Reagan's too, also, like, then your point, like, Reagan was also supposed to only be, like, 16, right?
Well, it's been 4 years, right? Yeah.
And yeah, she's, so she's 16.
The only time she seems like a child in this is when
there's
they
a lot of sexualization of.
Yeah, well, Linda Blair was very much. Was she dating Rick James at this point?
No. I looked this up. Linda Blair was dating, at this point, Rick Springfield, who was 25, and I think
if
they were.
If you've
ever
seen Californication, you know what's up about Rick Springfield.
Yeah, I forget, but I watched it years ago. She's 20. She's 25. Awesome. Yeah, she's 25. Or sorry, he's 25. She is engaged to, like, they're a long term couple. Then when she was older, like when they were like when she was like 18,
like in the '80s.
In the '80s, Rick James basically was like, I read about it today because I was interested. I was watching. Rick James was basically like, that's the woman I wanted to marry because she was down for anything you wanted. And basically,
you're a freak. Yeah,
she was the love of. He wrote Cold Blooded for her.
She was the love of his life, and that dude was self proclaimed super freak.
Yeah, and So and you know, Linda Blair.
I love that about.
Yeah, Linda Blair.
She was just DTF. She was like a lady in the '80s, just getting down.
And this is the '80s, I would say, but like. Early this, realizing how young she is in this movie, there are things that it's like, and that's kind of what you're bringing up. You're like, oh, this is a little just unnerving here.
Yeah, there's definitely a creepy sexualized element of this. They make it very clear, no matter what age she's supposed to be in this movie, that Linda Blair is a woman now. Like, the way they shoot her is very male gazy, if you know what I am saying.
Yes. Yes. And a few years later, when it's legal, she did some photos.
Sure. She dated Super Freak. She was in Playboy. She rules.
Yeah, she's cool. She's a cool lady.
She's a cool chick. She's very cool.
I wish she was popping up in Believer. That actually would make me excited to be like.
Yeah, I don't know. We can talk a little bit about part of like what was kind of giving me a little more. Again, it's kind of the same way I feel about Terminator Salvation. People like to shit on Terminator Salvation. It's the only Terminator movie that had the balls to not be Terminator 2. Like, literally every other Terminator movie is just that. And I feel that way about when I see the Believer trailer. I was like, oh, wow, bold move to bring back Ellen Burstyn and basically do the plot of The Exorcist only with two people instead of one.
Yeah, it's going to be two, like, girls, and it's going to be a different families. And yeah, like,
and they'll do some shocking, gross horror shit, but the point is, it's just the same shit that we've seen. And there's been a billion exorcism movies since The Exorcist, and they're all like that. At least this was its own thing.
Yeah.
Can't take that away from it, you know?
Yeah, that, even like 3, one of my favorites, yeah. It's its own thing. It's not like
the best parts about 3 are the non. I mean, obviously, we all stand Brad Dourif super hard, and what he does with the exorcism scenes is incredible. There's some great stuff in there, but also the best stuff in the movie is not that.
The best scene in that, the creepiest scenes in that movie, and it'll still get me. You know, is the confession fucking scene with the old lady just talking.
I love the dream sequence where he talks to the kid with the head sewn back on and all that stuff.
Fucking
is so good.
Charles Bark, I know, Patrick Ewing's in the background, like Fabio, and like, unreal. Anyway, that's a different podcast. That's a gushing podcast for me.
Yeah, this is a different, we're doing a different thing here.
But I, you know, I like the off brand, and I commend any creativity. So I do like that for this movie. And this movie is plagued by studio interference. It had like a writer's room of
expectations. Obviously,
it had a writer's room of like 5 different people. Like it had a, the director that made it even said like, yeah, there was way too many writers in this room. None of this stuff makes sense. What's funny is my DVD, my Blu-ray, because like, I think Scream Factory just likes to put these things on like their disc. The second disc is the TV edit.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
I wonder if it has, I like when TV edits have to have extra scenes because of like to get into a certain length. And it's like weird. They put weird stuff back in them.
Well, that's like that. The Scream Factory of The Thing. It has like 3 different TV versions on it.
Does it really?
Yeah.
That's funny. That's what I still need to pick up, my copy of The Thing.
Oh, wait, no, is it The Thing? Anyway, it's The Thing. Mallrats 2, the Arrow release of Mallrats, has a couple versions on it.
The extended, like, the original opening of Mallrats at all. That, you know what? It sucks. The studio was right. It's shitty. Yeah. And like when I had to replay, I had a DVD of Mallrats in it, like out of scratch or wouldn't play, and I had to replace it. And I thought about buying that Arrow, and I actually ended up going back and buying the old version of the DVD that had the like the Drew Struzan cover on it. That was like the collector's edition or DVD they released. I was like, that's what I want. I want that original version. It's got the old commentary on it. The new one sucks, and new Kevin Smith sucks, and I don't want anything to do with it. Like,
guys, welcome to our Kevin Smith cast.
Show Kevin Smith a little bit. Hey, speaking of, I told you I was watching Roadhouse the other night, R.I.P. Terry Funk, and I was reminded that on the fucking Roadhouse DVD, for some reason, there's a commentary by Kevin Smith and Scott Mosier, and at the time, I was a fan, more of a fan. And I was like, oh, that's cool. They'll probably have some insights, and maybe they're just big fans of the movie. Yeah. And then I remember listening to it, and it was just like, no, they're just two dudes. They didn't even know, like, I knew more interesting shit about the movie than they did. Or had. And I was just like, are you ever going to say anything? They're just like, oh, that's cool. Wow. Oh, this movie's crazy, guys. You know, it just kind of brought back a sense memory of like the Kevin Smith to come. Like that's literally kind of what he ended up becoming, and it's just bumming out.
Oh, sure, I'll come on, but I won't talk about what you want him.
Yeah.
Real quick, and I'll go back to extras too. Like Kevin Smith, today Kevin Smith went on Tom Segura, one of the Tom Segura podcasts, but he wouldn't just stop talking about how much money he's like, wow, you must be doing great. You pulled all this in from stand-up and podcasting? I'm in the wrong field. And I'm like thinking, like, shut up, Kevin Smith. You have money, too.
Yeah, bitch, you have money. I answer, like, you know that's not what they want to hear about.
Anyway, I do want to bring up another thing I do want to make fun of. The fucking tap dancing number.
I think we were just getting to that when I was saying the only time that Reagan feels like a child in this movie is when they do the tap dancing number.
She's a tap recital out of fucking nowhere. And then, like,
you see her practicing for it for a second at the beginning of the movie, and then it's never referenced again until you're just seeing it. And also, is it like a recital at the school? Is it at her school, or is it at the facility? Because some of the kids at the facility, I don't think they could do a tap thing.
But also, it has to just be at her school, because is it at her school?
But then they never show her going to school for anything else. You never see her, like, attending classes.
But also, her school, too, is... if it's her school, like her, it's all about her art. Like she's in college too. Like, oh, you have one focus, you have an elective, and like this is what you're doing, your drawings and everything.
Think about how much her art sucks. It sucks.
Dude, well, she a little earlier, like, was it the Nurse Ratched hands fucking the father this awful drawing, and he's like, oh my god, the flames have started, and then they run to the basement, and they're like, they're putting out a fire.
I was cracking up. We had just watched South Park Bigger Longer Uncut, me and my son, and he does the same Cartman ass firefighting where he just hits the fire with a stick. It's like the stick is made of, you can't put a fire out by hitting it with a stick, you ass. It's like a crutch. He's got a crutch. He's just like, ooh.
And they're all just standing there, and then like she's still like,
oh, and she sees the flames behind him, and it's like the picture, and you're like, oh,
awful. Another really silly thing about this movie is how randomly Linda Blair, like, or the character of Reagan, will just go, oh yeah, I remember these things, and then like it the shifts are everywhere. So speaking of the shifts, back to the tap dancing. So the something's going on in Africa with the boy. He's going through the fucking motions of it. So she starts seizing.
Because she's connected, but it's like she's not supposed to be connected to him. She's supposed to be connected to Richard Burton, right?
Yeah, well, he's connected now, I thought, because he went in that machine when he shouldn't, or the telekinesis. Because we fast forward a little bit when they are like, oh my god, we have to go back out of nowhere. We're like, now we have to go back to DC to the original room.
Yeah. And that's the only place to go. That's the Pazuzu's spirit still lies there or something.
Same bed set too after 4 years. I don't believe it.
I can believe they wouldn't sell. They wouldn't be able to sell that place. A priest dove out the window.
Yeah. Good property in DC that a famous actress lived in.
Yeah. But the housing market then wasn't what it is now.
True. But fucking Richard Burton. here or there, like a few, but all of a sudden is like, because they were on a, it looked like a plane, but they were on a bus on their way.
They get on a, Reagan and the priest are on a bus. The maid and Nurse Ratched get on a plane to catch up to
okay,
catch
so the plane starts, like the turbulence is on the plane.
Yeah.
And because, Pazuzu's controlling every aspect of the...
Pazuzu's connected to everybody, more so even than we thought when we get to DC, because we realize, oh, what? The Omen came out in between The Exorcist and The Exorcist 2, so the maid has to be revealed to be, like, a secret minion of the devil, and, like, turns on Nurse Ratched and doesn't save her from a car crash or something, and then sets herself on fire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's... So they crash into the car. One of the women die, not all of them.
Well, it's revealed, like I said, it's revealed that for, I guess, the maid has always been like serving Pazuzu.
Yeah, but that's very, like, Omen-like, and it's
kind
right,
of slammed
in there.
That's what I'm saying, the Omen came out in 97, it came out in between, that's what I'm saying.
And you did, yeah, and they go there, but at the same time, fucking Burton is... half possessed because sometimes
he's in there making out with Pazuzu Reagan.
Well, eventually, I'm talking about
trying to get him to kill regular Reagan.
I'm on the way there because regular Reagan is going, oh, come on, come with it. Brings him to the room, and then like, the room has no payoff.
Well, Pazuzu Reagan's in there.
Yeah, but then you see like sexy eyes Reagan. And
wait,
then,
she turns sexy, and then she makes out with Richard Burton, and then she tries to get Richard Burton to kill regular Reagan, but he can't. He can't do it.
Yeah, and then
she uses the thing on the locusts.
Yeah, and then the swarm of locusts come in, and
it's power.
It's fucking chaos everywhere, and they show up, and then they meet in the end of the front of the house, and they're like, okay, you can go now, and they just walk a little bit in the distance, and the credits hit. It's
Well, it's trying to have the Exorcist ending. It's trying to have the, like, when it's over, we walk away from the crime scene and that's it. But I did like during the final confrontation, they did have the new Pazuzu Reagan doing some cool poses that were very reminiscent of Reagan in the original movie and of the Pazuzu statue itself that they see the vision of in the first movie. She's doing a lot of like, it was pretty well shot, and it was pretty good. I liked the idea of the, like, whole building coming apart. It's like the walls are all separating and stuff. It felt very, like, talking about Hellraiser earlier, it felt very Hellraiser, where kind of like the stretching hell.
Yeah,
down.
The locusts fuck that place up.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, I mean, like, I know I've treated this less than most movies we cover. But I feel like I missed nothing. I feel like it gave you this. We talked about this, and I feel like we've missed nothing. And
no,
I think
we've actually done a better job. I thought we were going to struggle, but I feel like we've done a pretty good job of parsing through it.
And I feel, but the worst part about this, Brian, I don't mean to be a dick. I feel nothing about this movie.
Yeah. Again, I don't think it's good, but I don't think it's as bad as its reputation, especially when you like. Look historically at what horror sequels are and what they, like on a scale of horror sequel badness, I don't think this is a better movie than Freddy's Dead, right? Like there's franchises, every franchise has its peaks and valleys. This one took some swings. It tried some stuff.
It
wasn't fully successful, obviously.
It's a result of, it's culturally, so you'll disagree. Not culturally, culturally, I guess. It's a result of things in the 70s and 80s, very particularly, not knowing how to make sequels to things.
Oh, yeah.
And I say this, I mean, it's, I know you love, we love things like Jaws 2 and 3 and
I Outliers. Legitimately, Jaws 2 it's kind of what when I was talking about, like, people were probably disappointed with this. Jaws 2 is much more of a crowd pleaser sequel, more of the same. Give us what we liked about Jaws, just more of it.
And I think something, and this is cool that it's not a crowd pleaser, and they were like, yeah, this is the script we're gonna work with, when it went through a bunch.
They took a swing. Oh boy.
But I think it's a result of that, because you look at it, right, and I look at The First Exorcist, right? It's, I mean, it's still putting in the box, scariest movie I've ever made, and it's an Oscar darling. I looking at its accolades today, and I'm like, holy shit! Even Father Karras, and that actor's, it's like his name's Jim something.
Yeah.
That's his first role in a movie. Gets a Best Supporting Actor nomination. Linda Blair, Best Supporting Actress. Ellen Burstyn, you know, Best Actress. Like, it doesn't just what today would happen, right? If anything was this. If today's awards landscape happened, that would rack up technical shit. And they would say fuck themselves.
Like, look at how, did Nope get any performance? Like, Nope was a huge hit in that genre last year. And did it get any noms? No.
So... I only bring that up is this movie immediately, not even franchise, movie has a prestige, there's things to it, and I get you capitalize, you want to make money, but it's wild to think of like, oh, that first movie you fucking love, that's like, we read about it and like, you learn about it in film school, and, you know, William Friedkin is a genius, and this and that, oh, there's a slew of sequels. One's pretty good. One's really excellent.
Yeah.
But you're not going to watch it because
you're going to get too bogged down. It's like telling people that Bumblebee is good, but like, you got to slog through all the Transformers movies to get to it, you know?
Honestly, we had that. In this podcast, we had that conversation. I said Blue Beetle. I had this conversation twice today. It was like, a Blue Beetle, great. See it while it's in theaters. You and another person I talked to today, both, yeah, no, it's already, and it's waiting. It's like, no. Ignore the preconceived notions you have of the other things and go like, so I guess my tangent here is, it's interesting that The Exorcist is a franchise instead of this thing of like,
so many, we've talked about that too, so many franchises, movies, not just horror, should never have been franchises, should have just been one movie, and then they would be true classics still.
Like, this could be
Unsullied.
You know, it's like how like Black, like I think we revere like something like Black Christmas, right? Never any answers, never any sequels. Yeah, remake. It's had three remakes, but that's not the same thing.
Remakes don't matter.
So I don't know. I'm glad I'm glad weird shit like this exists, and we're
like I said, as a bridge to the next thing, and as just kind of an oddity. I don't hate it. You know,
mm-hmm.
It has its place. Will I be revisiting it again anytime soon? Probably not, but I will be watching Exorcist 3.
Yeah, that's a frequent for me. Man. I mean, I'm glad I watched it. I'm not mad. I've been shitting on this. I'm not like mad I own it. You know, I'm not going to be like, oh, how dare
you're a completionist. It belongs. It's good enough to deserve to be in your franchise collection. If you're going to have a franchise collection, it deserves to be there.
I like that this disc, right, they're still trying to sell it, and they're still putting, you know, Pazuzu Reagan on the back, who's barely in the movie, you know.
Yeah.
And I mean, the new artwork,
they should have put the sexy version on the back with the glowing green eyes. Woo.
I think while we're on the air, I'm gonna flip and put the old cover.
Yeah, that's the one. I would definitely have the old cover on it. It's pretty rad.
Yeah, that would be a cool slip cover. But no, man, it's a good
Linda Blair. It's so weird. It's funny, we talked about how like she's grown into a woman in this movie, but she has one of those perpetual baby faces. She's like Amy Schumer. She just looks like a Cabbage Patch doll.
There's a couple shots in this movie that baby face full on, like this poster, like I said, this to me is iconic, because anyone who's ever walked in Blockbusters, this stood out, because it's just like, huh?
This, so stark,
she,
you know.
She looks old. Older here.
That's a great. It's a great image of her.
And then it's literally like, I'm just looking at this now too. The six actors below. It's like they even put her again as one of the actors below here.
Yeah.
And it's written as, you know, which is funny too. We didn't. It's John Borman's film of Eric. Like Exorcist 2, The Heretic. It's such a weird phrasing.
Yeah.
A Richard Lederer production. It's a weird movie, man.
We should have looked up. I bet William Friedkin said some hilarious shit about The Heretic.
He said he said the funniest shit about it. Remember, right a little bit before he passed, I think you and I got on with people on Twitter because he was talking about Exorcist 2 and everything, and he was like, you know, fuck that shit. He was like, blah, blah, blah. And he was talking about remakes, and someone was like, you know, he's definitely upset about the new movie coming out. And I think you and I were both like, he doesn't give a shit. This is just William freaking reacting to shit.
Yeah, like, he doesn't, like, no, this is just, like, no, he was already like this. He's not like a Ridley Scott who you have to goad him to say some shit. He was just always spouting off. William Friedkin was a madman.
Yeah, I love William. I watched Sorcerer for the first time this year, and it's just beautiful. That's something I would like. That's something
William
I would
Friedkin's
like.
William Friedkin's such an I love William Friedkin movies. I love that style of movies from the 70s that absolutely refuses to hold your hand at all. It's like, you have to watch this movie and understand it. And if you don't, well, fuck you. You just don't get it then.
You know what's weird? I think, I wish The Exorcist 2, what we talked about today, doesn't do that. But the times it tries to do that, where they like put in weird exposition and voiceover.
Yeah.
Deters from the movie.
Leave some of that more ambiguous, like Blade Runner.
Yeah, like there's that one VO at the end when I think the locust is flying around or something, or close to then, and they're like, oh yes, now that she's in there, that, you know, Pazuzu could only attach itself to people with telekinetic power, you know.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, I didn't need that.
Yeah.
That's
you can stop.
Silly. That's sillier than your movie.
Right. You should have just let me think it was something cool and supernatural and not try to explain it to me.
All sci-fi, and I think this movie fits in this frame, as long as it lives in the rules, it lives in the rules that it set. So they set up the Inception machine, and at least it lives within the rules of the Inception.
Well, that's kind of why I said it. It's what made me think of the Inception machine, is that, like, they never go out of their way to explain how the Inception machine works. It's just part of their world. You're supposed to accept it. It's part of sci-fi. And you're right. This movie has sci-fi elements. And if you can take in the fantasy part, you should be able to take in the sci-fi part. And so if you step back and accept that the machine just works, now that doesn't change the fact that the way it works looks dumb on screen and is boring and is not maybe portrayed in the most interesting way, but it's still an interesting element to add this kind of, like, you know... Definitely not the first horror movie to be like, let's get into each other's minds, you know?
You're reminding me of what I thought this movie was. Like, if you asked me, what's the movie just based off of the imagery I've seen? Mm-hmm. And I would have told you, oh, you know, post the events of the first movie, she's just been hooked up to machines and they're prodding her and, like... You know, she develops a telekinesis, because I always knew there was telekinesis type stuff, and she develops a telekinesis from that, because the only shots you see of this movie is the
thing with the head on and the lights shining on people.
It's the only thing you see of this movie.
Maybe some logo, like Pazuzu stuff.
I implore everyone, I was going to send it to you today, but I didn't. Watch the trailer that's on IMDb of this. It's like 2 hours, and it's just a clip show with, like, it's like from The Exorcist, you know, and then it's like a clip show of everything in the movie to like a funky bass jam, like it's a disco bit. It's like a bang bang, you know. It's like, they don't have any like setup. It's just clips and a fucking music video, jazz bass funk.
Jamming the bass.
Yeah. Anyway, I've kind of said everything I've had about this.
Yeah, I don't think there's much else to say about the Heretic. Like I said, it's one of those movies, if you're an Exorcist fan and a completionist, I would say it's worth your time to watch it at least once.
Yeah, I'm not mad I watched it. I'd watch it again in another capacity of you know, maybe if some friends wanted to sit around and like goof.
You could definitely do that with this movie. It's got enough weird stuff. It's
weird.
It's got some lulls where you can conversate.
I think conversate would help, because my big, I guess, bugaboo with it is it's a lot of ambient noises a lot of the time. Like, it was definitely a note of people are afraid of noise, so they just make a lot of it, but it's you know,
like, trying to tap into some of like what they did with the sound design of The Exorcist, but they're just not doing it very well. I'll tell you what scared me the most in this whole movie was that crazy balcony in Reagan's apartment where it's like you could just step off the side. Like, yeah, it had railings, but the railings didn't meet at the corners. You could just walk off.
I thought she was going to slip right off.
That was the most anxiety-producing part of the whole movie.
Yeah, she gets saved immediately because the thing was working with Pazuzu, and Pazuzu's conduit can't die.
No, you gotta have Pazuzu.
Anyway, Brian, it's always a pleasure. Where, you know, I know where everyone could find you at Herskules.
Ooh, I'm on Blue Sky now.
You're on Blue. Can I get an invite?
Hey, if I get an invite, I'll give it to you.
Give it to me. I'm your co-host.
Of course the Flyboys will get my first invites. I don't have any invites. Well, do I have to post? Do you think I need to post more to get invites? Is that how that works?
I think I think it's have you had it for 2 weeks?
I think it's just time. I think I just have to wait.
I think it's after 2 weeks you get
2 weeks. Okay, I haven't had it 2 weeks yet.
Okay.
It's just like you end up following the people, the big names from Twitter that are over there, and they're just putting the same jokes on both places.
That's why your tweet was there today. I thought you were just being sassy to be sassy. Anyway. No. You can find us here, Flyover State of Fear.
At Herskules, where all the cool kids are at.
Yeah. And hopefully at this point you're listening to it. I'm still, you know, more doing horror shit with the TikTok. That's been real fun. Yeah.
I'm on Twitter too. I'm never gonna leave. I'm fucking playing the violin on the Titanic.
I'm going down with the ship.
I have an Android and I have not updated my app, so I still have Bird app. I don't have X.
Really?
It's awesome.
All right. Well, stay frightful, everyone.
Bye. Welcome to Flyover State of Fear.